Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Coming up on today's show, we've got all the usual in music, interviews, and of course, all things literary, so stick around. I would go out tonight, but I have not got a stitch to wear. Friday night, folks, and you're listening to Writer's Block 90.3 Near FM with me, Morgan O'Reilly. Well, we've got a great show coming up for you today. We're going to be talking all about the Tiger Dublin Fringe. We've got Chris Nelson on in a couple of minutes' time. He's the artistic director of the Tiger Dublin Fringe Festival. And we've also got Kelly Shatter and Camille Lucy Ross, who make up Brazen Tales. They'll be coming in after 4 o'clock for our usual writer's slot interview. But first, a couple of notices. The Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, they have got a new show to open the autumn programme. The show is called Swing. It's a comedy about dancing, love, music and not getting settled, not going home, putting on the kettle, putting on the slippers, putting on the heating. Not in that order, of course, any order you like. But it's not about getting settled, it's about being brave, going out and trying your best. It's opening up the autumn season. It's in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary. Also, if you're around Dublin tonight and you're looking for something to do, Taking the Mic, the open mic poetry night in the Irish Writers Centre on Parnell Square, is on from 7 to 9 p.m. A guest MC for this evening is a great person for he's been a great supporter of Near FM last few years, Stephen James Smith. He's a fantastic slam poet, and I would definitely recommend checking that place out. That is the Irish Writers Centre, Parnell Square, 7 to 9 p.m. tonight. So, anyway, to music. First track, this is a great one now. Dire Straits, first track off one of their very early albums. Can't remember the name of the album now, escapes me. But anyway, it's The Sultans of Swing, and this is Dire Straits. Ah, listen, folks, it does not get much cooler than that. Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits with The Sultans of Swing. Well, you are listening to 90.3 Near FM, Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, and I've got Chris Nelson on the line, the artistic director of the Tiger Dublin Fringe Festival. Chris, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
Chris, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. How no problem at all. I'm doing okay. The weekend is here, so party time.
You better believe it. Yeah.
So the festival kicks off in just over a week, Chris, the Tiger Dublin Fringe Festival, that is. Tell us about it.
That's right. Well, it's our 21st year. Audiences will know Tiger Dublin Fringe for 21 years of the very best new theater, dance, circus, comedy, spectacle, all kinds of performances that have taken over sort of loved and favorite parts of the city. Over our history, Fringe has really been the place to discover new voices and new artists as they're getting big, and really the place to for audiences to kind of be the most adventurous with their art going. So seeing the very brightest international and Irish artists in one program that is chock-a-block full of contemporary ideas, new forms, wild experiences, great nights out, and lots of laughs and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay, excellent. You mentioned there both Irish artists and international artists. Is there a large international contingent at the festival?
This year it's a select international contingent, I would say, and it probably is in every year. Really, the festival is the engine for independent Irish arts, dancers, theater makers, circus makers, comedians. So we focus there mostly. And then the international artists are real flourishes in the program that kind of add something that we might not be seeing here, or that we really, it's like very timely for us to see in Ireland. So one really good example of that is Scotch and Soda, this fantastic circus show by Company 2 from Australia. We don't really have this large ensemble circus thing here in Ireland. and they're really headlining the festival. Scotch and Soda is this incredible daredevil, acrobatics, lots of balancing. There's a sort of this gin joint in the 1920s storyline throughout it, so it's circus theater in a way. It takes place in the Spiegel Tent. It's the first time we brought the Spiegel Tent, which is this gorgeous wooden and mirrored and velvety structure, right. A freestanding tent, classic European kind of really harkening back to the olden days for the performing arts. And that'll be in Wolfstone Square. So Scotch and Soda is the headliner there. It's the kind of show where they're leaping, swooping over your feet. They've got this jazz band called the Crusty Suitcase Band that plays along with them. It's 70 rip-roaring minutes where you won't breathe. So you might, we might turn purple. But it's really this kind of thing, like, you don't get to see that anywhere else in Ireland, because, the circus form is quite new here, and it's really something special in particular to Australia, and we're so excited that they're coming. They're some of the world's leading circus artists. So Scotch and Soda is a really good example. Another good example of how that sort of international flavor might be Mix Justin Vivian Bond, who's probably one of the world's most iconic cabaret performers. V has been performing for 25 years and also a very important transgendered rights activist. So that's a really special thing, I think, especially because as Ireland kind of changes its laws around transgendered people here in the state, to have an artist who is so iconoclastic and so iconic and so ferocious and hilarious performing in the Spiegel Tent with Thomas Bartlett, who people here will love from The Gloaming and other voices. It's that kind of singular night that the festival really loves to deliver. And so that has a kind of international and Irish feel because V will be joined by some local and international musicians. So there's always, for us, it's also about crossover, where our Irish artists can connect with artists abroad. And there's a lot of works like that as well. Yeah. Rory Donovan has a piece called Ghosts, which he's made with a Berlin-based artist named Asaf Aronson, so that's kind of an Irish-German co-presentation. So there's the program is full of things that are local and things that are connecting us to the world outside of our shores.
Excellent. And, I mean, you mentioned the Spiegel Tent there. It's going to be in Wolfstone Square. Will it be in Wolfstone Square for the duration of the festival?
For the duration of the festival. Oh, okay. The first show, Scotch and Soda, opening on the 8th. Get there first if you want to get the hottest ticket in town. And then we run right until the 20th. We close the festival with the Hootenanny, curated by Megan Reardon and James Walmsley. And it is like a smorgasbord of Fringe's past, present, and future. So it's circus, it's spoken word, it's music. It's really a variety show. It's hilarious. You know, you can get up and get a drink. You can come back. It has that really festive feel. And it's a fundraiser, actually, for our 21st year to support the way we fuel and back artists. And also projects for next year's festival. So it's a real celebration of all things Fringe. I wouldn't say make it your only Fringe stop, but make it a definite Fringe stop, the Hootenanny, because it's like the great montage of everything that's happened at the festival, and you really got to check that out.
Everybody loves a montage, I think is fair to say. So we have a Spiegel Tent.
Don't we all have a little soundtrack running in the background?
Oh, absolutely.
Mind,
I mean,
going about our day.
Every 80s film.
Going like, let's just edit this all together and get the good clip.
So we have the Spiegel Tent in Wolfstone Square. I was looking at the website earlier. You've got so many venues. I mean, it's really happening right across the city, right across the county even. Does it kind of transform the Dublin cityscape for the 2 weeks?
I think that's one of the things that the festival really does is it really is a civic festival. It's a festival that celebrates all of Dublin and brings the city alive. This year we have a lot of new works in the North Inner City Core, and of course Temple Bar is often the beating heart of our festival. So things like Grounded, which is this really searing, terrific theater production from Siren Productions. Anne Hathaway played the main lead on Broadway, and here we have Claire Dunn, who's absolutely fantastic, being directed by Selena Cartmel. That's at Project Arts Center, which has been, home to the festival since our beginning. Yeah. We're also at Smock Alley, which turns into a comedy club with the likes of Foyle Arms and Haw, Garode Farley, and Chris Kent. And then, all throughout the city, we have Circus and Ariel in the Trees of Phoenix Park, late night at 10 p.m. It's a show called Behind the Dark by Lucy Smokes. Imagine you'll go out to the foot of Phoenix Park, get on a little trolley, get led. It's like gothic horror in our own park, in our, you know, who, like, going to the Phoenix Park at 10 p.m., that's wild. And then they're going to be soaring over our heads. You'll be crunching on the leaves. I've seen some of their work before. It's absolutely terrifying and really, really, really fun. So if you're a horror fan or like an adventurous person who wants to say, yeah, I went to that show at 10 o'clock at Phoenix
Sounds
Park.
Very atmospheric.
That's a great show. That runs actually also through the duration of the festival. So there's lots of things that are experiences for the soul, experiences for the mind, and then real thrills, you know, like things that you kind of watch with your body and like an amusement park almost, but with very kind of artistic thinking behind it.
So
and actually a good example of that is sort of one of the little glittering things in the festival, which is Over the Top Wrestling, a local wrestling crew here who will be performing, doing actual wrestling, and that's in the Spiegel Tent as well.
Wow, Spiegel Tent, the place to be.
I think so, yeah.
We've talked about how the Dublin Fringe Festival can transform the physical landscape of the city. But, like, let's talk more artistically and ideologically and aesthetically now. Mm. I mean, does it have a transformative effect? I mean, you talked about various art forms in dialogue. I mean, you've got, there's music, dance, comedy, circus. You've got international acts mingling with Irish acts. But let's talk about the audiences. I mean, if I go along, if I'm a punter on the street out in Dublin, what can I expect? I mean, am I going to get my eyes open? Am I going to see new cultures, things I'd never see before? What can I expect from the Fringe
Festival? I think what you can expect is like a festival experience that celebrates in a lot of ways, contemporary Dublin life and the life around the world, or like kind of ideas from around the world. Part of it is the fact that the festival is so, like, works for a kind of advancement of every form. So we're trying to get the best cutting edge comedy and the best theater and the best dance. You're guaranteed that you're seeing artists who are pushing themselves to do something that they've really, really been hungry to do for a long time. And that might be genre defying, or it might be limit testing, or that it might be experimental, or it might be just really adventurous or really bold or really fun. And the fact that all these things live together means that you can, as an audience member, as a fringer, can come go to a comedy night to see something by Alison Spittle or David O'Doherty, and then right after go see an experimental dance piece by Emma Fitzgerald, or a film by Anya Stapleton. And that those things live together actually, I think, really speaks to the way we experience art these days. You know, everyone's music playlist, if you look at it, it's like, wow, you like that and you like that. And you know, you're into opera and you're into techno. Wow. And in a lot of ways, the festival does that. It showcases the very best and the very freshest, newest of all of these forms, and breaks down the barriers between those. So I think audiences get a couple things. They get really adventurous art, provocative things often. And they also get to connect with other audience members who are like, yeah, I'll take a chance on that. That seems like that artist is really pushing something there. So I think there's a different kind of, you make a different kind of connection actually with other Dubliners at Fringe than you would at other festivals, where it's like, okay, I know all the music heads are going to be at the music festival and I'll just go there. At Fringe, it's really a panoply of all different kinds of tastes. And I think that collision, those collisions of tastes and those merging of tastes make something that is really a unique festival-going experience.
I really like that idea of creating a community within the audience, and you used a wonderful word there, fringer. I've never heard that one before.
Oh, no?
No, I'll definitely be throwing that one out in the pub later, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And so, 'cause I've seen people, you know, they come up to our box office at that Lower Ormond Quay this year on, actually hosted by the film festival, and they'll come in and they'll say, what's the funny thing on today? Or where's the good theater? Or what's the kind of like, you know, I've got my wellies, where can I go outside? So there's this kind of thing of like, you're doing the fringe and throughout you're picking up on these new artists and these new names, and that you're seeing these people as they're kind of making their boldest, brightest steps in their career. Like, you know, I mentioned Alison Spittle. She's got a lot of things happening for her right now at RTE, and she's doing a show with us at the International Bar. So it's like, there's this, she's on a trajectory, as is Al Porter, who's going to be performing for the first time with a swing band, the Swing Cats. Yeah. So he's taken his whole, like, vintage comedy, sort of very classic kind of MC style, and he's going to be on stage with a swing band for the first time. Now, he did a show with us last year that was a real success in a small venue, and this year we've given him the keys to the Spiegel Tent. So he's there for one night with a swing band. So he's, you know, and he's on television all the time, but for him, this is the fringe of the place where he can test out this new format and share this new kind of crazy mashup of Al Porter plus great swing band. I mean, that's going to be a really hot night. So that's what it's about. It's about these kind of matchups and events and happenings that wouldn't happen otherwise in the city, yeah, and that might not draw your attention to them either.
Certainly sounds like there's something for everyone. Finally, Chris, can you just give us some information? Where can we go to get all the dates of the shows and
where can we
go to get tickets and everything?
Well, the best place, of course, is online, fringefest.com. And if you're on Twitter, it's @TigerDubFringe. Similarly, we're on Facebook, of course, and you find out a lot about the festival on social media. If you're the kind of person that likes your guide and your guidebook, then go down to our box office at 13 Lower Ormond Quay. There's box office staff there that love to be like, you know what you need? You need a little contemporary music, or you need a little dance. You need some tunes. And they'll match you up with the best show, and they've got all the recommendations. They also have information about shows that might not be in the brochure but are on the website. We did two late announcements as sort of special birthday presents, if you will. Holly Herndon, an incredible electronic music producer from San Francisco and Berlin, is performing at Spiegel Tent, as is Christian Loeffler, who's another electronic musician. So those two last additions are quite exciting. So I would say the best is go to the website again, fringefest.com, or down to our box office at Lower Ormond Quay, and then watch out during the festival from the 7th to the 20th. We'll be all over the city.
Chris, it sounds absolutely fantastic. Sounds like a riotous 2 weeks for Dublin City.
I hope so. We'll see you there too. Hey?
Thanks very much for coming on, Chris.
Great.
You're very good.
Okay, cheers.
All the best.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care, Maureen. Bye-bye.
Chris Nelson of the Tiger Dublin Fringe Festival. Sounds like a brilliant 2 weeks in Dublin. It's going to be happening from the 8th for 2 weeks, the 8th of September, that is. I definitely checked that one out. It's all over the city. You can't miss it. Anyway, some more music. You are listening to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, on 90.3 Near FM. After 4 o'clock, we've got Kelly Shatter and Camille Lucy Ross of Brazen Tales coming in to talk to us about drama. But a little bit of music now. I first saw these guys on the Imelda May show a couple of weeks ago now. Six or seven of them in the band from all over the world, but they're fronted by an Irishman from Tala, Al Doherty. The artist, they are called Al Doc. This song is the first title off their new, or the first track, excuse me, off their new album. The name escapes me now, but the artist is Al Doc, and yeah, fantastic group, guys. I definitely checked them out. Al Doc, Soon a Lucky Da. Aldock with Soon a Lucky Da. The album was From Tala to Halla. That was the name of it. I don't know where Halla is, but we all know where Tala is. Anyway, and the second song we heard there was the New York Dolls, I'm a Looking for a Kiss, from way back in the 60s. Having a clue what the date is. But anyway, stick around. After 4 o'clock, we've got Kelly Shatter and Camille Lucy Ross coming in to talk to us about their drama and their theatre company, Brazen Tales. They've got a show on in the Tiger Dublin Fringe Festival. But now we'll go to ads. Stick around here on Writer's Block 90.3 with me, Morgan O'Reilly. And you are very welcome back to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Well, it's after 4 o'clock, and that means that a living, breathing writer, or two, has come into the studio. Ladies, you're very welcome. Camille, welcome back. And
thank
Kelly,
you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. We're almost one mind at this point anyway. Yeah. So.
Almost one mind. Okay, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. Camille, we'll start with you.
Sure.
You're welcome back to the
Thank
studio.
You.
Could you please remind us us and our listeners of who you are, what are you doing, where are you from?
Sure. I'm from Bray, County Wicklow. I've been an actor predominantly for the last 6 years, mm-hmm. since I finished the Gaiety School. And then kind of progressively over that time became more involved with sort of the making of the work and the development of work. And I guess that encouraged me to actually put pen to paper and start writing in the last 2 years. Gradually, it's becoming more and more part of what I'm doing and still performing just as much, but writing as well. And mostly been writing for myself at this point.
Okay, so you evolved into it, say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kind of happened naturally over time. It was sort of a combination of my interests and what sort of work was being offered to me.
And how about you, Kelly? Did you start as an actor or a theatre maker, or was writing the first thing?
No, it was performance, definitely the first thing. That was my undergrad. And then through that, even in that undergrad, we would make work, and that was always the thing that I was most excited by. So I did a master's in collaborative theatre and worked as an actor for a good few years, but more and more, again, it just became that the most exciting thing for me was to make the work. And from there I got into writing, and from writing I thought, I definitely want to write funny.
Can I stop? Yes, yeah, go interrupt. That's an interesting distinction, making work and writing. What's the difference?
Well, by making work, especially if it's collaborative theatre or devised theatre, usually it's not sitting at home working on a laptop or pen to paper. Mm. It's being in a room with other bodies and other people and developing the work in that with that trajectory. Okay. I suppose that's the difference. And so I definitely have done both. I've done sitting at a laptop writing and being in a room with other people to generate the material.
Yeah. Interesting point, though, because I think that's why I didn't think I could do writing. And I sort of had that notion I need to be sitting at a laptop on my own in a quiet, isolated room. And I've tried it, and I don't like the results.
So would you call yourself a social animal? I mean, is that a big part
of it? Yeah, I guess that might be part of it. I probably am more on the extrovert spectrum, so I probably work better with people. Mm. I also need to figure out ideas by talking about them. If they're in my head, it's harder for me to formulate and then put it down. It's like talking and moving and being with other people helps me generate and get clear.
And I mean, was Brazen Tales, I mean, did you found it, Camille? Was Kelly there at the start?
Kelly, no, we just started working together really in the last 6 months, is it now?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more.
And what brought you together?
Improv brought us together. Yeah. We've known each other through the theatre scene for about 5 years, sort of.
Yeah, it's been a while. We just knew each other distantly. So
yeah, we hadn't got to know each other very well. And then Kelly teaches improv with Stoke Improv.
Yeah, and so it was from wanting to write comedy, I decided to study improv. And then improv became a beast or an art form in its own right in my life. And it's been wonderful for making creative connections. So I met Camille through those classes, and through I invited actors in specifically to people I had in mind to work with, actually. And so it was just one of those nice things that came out of that.
How do you find the teaching? Where is Stoke? Is
Stoke Improv? Stoke is in Stoking the Fire.
Oh, I see.
But actually, yes, I have had people come up to me and be like, are you from Stoke originally?
I'm based in London.
And also, to be honest, I just like strong one-syllable names. I often find with these things, like Apple, you know, or not that that's a one-syllable, but often the name doesn't really have any meaning anymore. Yeah. It's just a thing. But I love teaching. I find that it's incredibly good for feeding into the work of writing and generating ideas, being inspired by seeing other people create.
I'd love to get to improv in a minute, but
yeah, sure.
I mean, going back to, I'm going to really carry this writing thing with me. So you both were actors, performers originally.
Yeah.
I mean, would you revise that definition of yourself now? I mean, theatre makers, or is writing still too far? Still
no,
a bridge too far.
I think I would say writer now, like, and it's taken a little while because, I mean, I still feel very new to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason it's tied to what we were talking about, the idea that writing has to be a solitary thing. And I kept putting down what I was doing as something else. Like, I couldn't possibly be a writer because I'm not sitting on my own doing it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of went, well, who's to say what a writer has to be, or a creative person.
True.
When you're an actor or a visual artist, which are two things I would do a little bit of, you don't kind of say there's one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The half the job is figuring out how you do it and how you do it best.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of only now going, oh, okay, I work with people best and I work on my feet and I improvise the dialogue, which is writing. I mean, it's just not putting it on paper. You're mm-hmm. creating a story from your mind.
Yeah. So. And in the same way, in the last couple of years, have embraced the title writer as one of the many facets. I've made peace with the fact that I am a performer, an improviser, a writer and a director, and that's all great, and there doesn't have to be one label for yourself.
Yeah.
Is the labelling, is that kind of a hurdle in your mind to say to somebody at a party, I'm a writer? I mean,
I guess it can be. I think it's partly confidence. Yeah. It's partly, is that what other people think a writer is? Yeah, it's like you don't want, people kind of want you to be one thing or another.
Hmm.
And I think it's going less that way, though. The more people I meet, the more I see so many people now doing various things, and they all help each other rather than being a hindrance that you have two things. I think particularly in the creative world, they all feed in and make what you're doing stronger, I think.
Yeah.
It's funny how the confidence issue is such a big thing. It's calling yourself a writer, but also writing something and getting up on stage to perform it or direct it or whatever it may be.
Yeah, there's actually this process of, I have co-written before, but this is probably the biggest project I've co-written, and having someone else in the room with you and as part of that process is, I think, really does help with the confidence, because you're constantly supporting the other with their ideas and not necessarily always supporting every idea, but it's...
Yeah.
Overall, the overarching feeling is one of support and moving forward together. So I find that really, really beneficial.
Mm. Yeah, because I would have thought writing together would have been, just generally, co-writing would be very difficult. And I think it does just depend on finding the right match for you.
Yeah.
And I think we've found a pretty good match because we support each other, and then we're looking at making the work the best thing rather than feeding who's come up with the best idea. It's not about us, it's about...
Well, let's talk about your current project that you are co-writing together,
mm-hmm.
or have co-written. Big Bobby, Little Bobby. It is. Is this the first time you've worked with the Fringe Festival?
No. Well, I've done, I think, maybe 5 or 6 shows with Fringe before over the years. Last year was a break I had from the Fringe for the first time in, I think, 5 or 6 years. Yeah, but I haven't. Yeah, no. I've devised work and I've worked with different companies.
Yeah, and I've had smaller roles. I've never been a part of the main facet. I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago I did a show where I was a shadow puppeteer, but I came in at the very end. It was really enjoyable, actually, and there was something really special about not having the burden of responsibility that it wasn't my show, because a lot of the things I do are mine. So it was a huge amount of fun, but it's been a while, so it's really nice to be back in it.
Anyway, but Big Bobby, Little Bobby, it's on from the 15th to the 19th, correct
That's
me if I'm
right,
wrong.
That's right, there is a preview on the 14th as well, if people want to go to that, but come after the 14th.
Co-written by yourselves from the outset, really? I mean, is it...
Actually, I started sort of working around January time. Rough Magic, who have been giving us production support, who are very kind people, were giving me space to start writing. I was developing an idea, and I kind of had a very loose character and some sort of ideas I wanted to work with. And I had been doing improv with Kelly for a few months, and it was during one of our classes that I was like, oh, Kelly's the person to work on this. So I'd originally asked her to come on as director when we started working together. I think it was a matter of maybe a couple of weeks when we realised, actually, we're going to co-write this. And I think we were saying the other day, we thought maybe that, it felt like I was doing the show and you were going to help me write it. And it's just become such a 50-50 thing. It's been amazing.
Was improv the start of the work? Is that how you begin?
Mm. Yeah, I think before we did any actual improv, I think there was a good few days of just sitting talking about the work.
Yeah.
You do have some kind of germ within you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The very first thing I did was just before I started working with Kelly, I just had this one scene I'd improvised with my sister-in-law, who's a writer. I was just playing around with her, and it was this strange character talking about having a demon and having to feed it sugar to kind of look after it and be like, you know, you've got to take your demon out and talk to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the idea that if you have a, we all have a bit of a darkness in us, and if you ignore it, it doesn't tend to make things better. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to look at it and see what it is. And so that was the sort of the tiny little germ I brought to Kelly. So yeah. That's, and then from that we talked and then went to improv.
Yeah, I think actually, you know what? We mapped, before we started doing any improv, we mapped out in a very loose skeleton structure of what that play
what scenes would be.
So I'm a big fan of not working chronologically, because I often the beginning and the end is the hardest. So we basically just chose something within that felt like a nice, easy, accessible way in, and started to go from there.
And the scenes were kind of written on separate pieces of paper, so it was like a jigsaw that we'd move around and go, what would it be like if we did this with it and this with it?
And how long does it take to settle the time frame?
Oh, well, that's changed, like, up until a week ago, possibly.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not the time frame, but certainly over a process of a few months, we developed the scenes to get stronger and stronger so that we could then...
Okay, excellent. Yeah. And for you, Kelly, has improv always been fundamental in the writing process?
No, it was... Because I studied film writing with a view to writing TV sitcoms without any improv training. And again, that was a lot of sitting at a laptop. And I looked at people whose work I wanted to emulate, Tina Fey, Kristen Wiig, and the thing that brought them to where they were was improv. So it was only then that I studied improv. And it's just been a lovely ripple effect having done that. It doesn't mean that I don't sit at a laptop from time to time, but it just means now that I'm much more comfortable with getting up and moving and collaborating with people. And as Camille was saying earlier, not feeling like in order to be a writer you have to just sit and write, because I am definitely a more social animal.
Did I read this right? The two of you were in LA recently?
Well, actually, I was in LA this summer, but the reason I was there was because Kelly had recommended this improv training to me, which you did three?
I did in 2012 and 2013.
Yeah, you did a couple of years.
Yeah, I did it over 2 years.
What does it involve? How does one train in improv?
Well, it's a great question.
I've been trying to explain this to my family when people don't know, like, the first, like, anything about improv. And it's kind of difficult.
People ask me that a lot, when I tell them I'm an improv teacher. And then the analogy I like to use is, if you were in a football team, how do you practice? It's this, you never know exactly what a match is going to be. All you can do is learn the skills and have lots of ideas of possible outcomes. And you're building muscle. With improv, you're building muscle
memory,
and you're also linking different neural pathways in the brain that helps you think sharper and faster.
Like that, you're really present, but your brain is kind of. Can be outside of itself, seeing the architecture of this story that you're basically making up on the spot. So you're given skills to go, you know, these are things that make it clearer, these are things that make it funnier and sharper, and, you know, that connect with an audience easier. There's a lot you can
But that
learn.
All feels, I feel like that, the thing that I said was still quite vague. Really what you're doing is you're giving people the confidence to know that they can make stuff up on the spot.
Yeah.
And yet, you don't want it to be formulaic, though, and you don't want to have these, like, stock answers.
No, you don't want stock answers, but there is sort of, you might learn a structure. I don't know if there's a simple way, like, so there's something called a Harold, is just one structure that you could learn. And when you get up with your group, you know that you're going to do a group scene, you know you're going to do a couple of duologue scenes with two people, and you're going to do more group scenes. So you have a vague idea of how many people, maybe. But as Kelly said, it's a lot of actually working on intuition as a group and having a group mind. It's kind of, it is a bit mind-blowing stuff. but when you, it's learning how to follow your instinct, which is amazing, because for life, that's what you need.
So it's kind of like, you said the group mind there, and I suddenly thought hive mind, you know, group of ants.
It has got that feeling that animals do, and animals naturally have it. They know to keep moving in one direction. It's like you look at a flock of birds, I'm getting very like, ooh, but it is a bit of that. Like if you're in a group long enough, you start to it's kind of a slightly feels like a magical thing. You start to move in the same direction, it finish you to the sentences and know what the person's going to say before they say it.
Yeah.
So and I think that's why people get really addicted to improv. It becomes like a real, I don't know, addiction.
Obsession. It feels obsession. It feels amazing. It's the closest I think you can probably feel to jumping out of a plane. Because it is. It's like free falling.
Which is good for me because I'm afraid of heights. Oh. So.
It's wow, free falling into art.
Into art. There's the laugh. Sorry, that's the laugh. Don't apologise for it.
Okay, back to Big Bobby, Little Bobby.
Yes, yeah.
So how did it, I mean, did it morph and change and evolve many times over the process of rehearsals and writing?
I guess that idea, like there's been that germ of the character and sort of the feel. Like, it was that kind of, like, there was a feeling of what we wanted it to be. We wanted to have this sort of dark underbelly, but for there to be a lot of humour in it. Like, I'm a big fan of commie tragedy or tragicomedy, whichever one you want to call it. As I think, I like to deal with, like, issues that mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And if you put comedy into it, I think it lets people see it in a new light. And it kind of, it doesn't necessarily frighten people away from going, I'm going to talk about heavy stuff. And life is not just light or dark, so.
Yeah, and I think in terms of the different modes it takes, this, for some reason, maybe because I was also in director mode as we were writing, I think this, it was easy to be okay with the first draft being a bit of a blob of a thing. Mm. And I think the more you can do that, the more you can then arrive at a second draft at the right time. But if you're trying to get your first draft to be honed and nuanced and polished, then it's not going to be the thing it needs to be. That makes sense.
No, it's very professional sounding.
Yeah.
Sorry, we should specify as well who is involved in the production. So Kelly is the director, Camille,
and
actor.
The performer, yes. It's a one-woman show.
It's a one-woman show.
And then we've written it together. And then we have a great team of designers and production and everything, so.
Okay, and speaking of tragicomedy, I was reading the press release for Big Bobby, Little Bobby, called A Tender and Twisted Comedy.
Yeah.
Kind of, I mean, it gets immediately what you were saying there, tragicomedy. I don't know what to make of that.
I guess that's our way of saying dark comedy, because we just thought dark comedy said a lot, but also it feels appropriate. It is, the characters are kind of twisted, they're a little bit messed up, but there's heart at it, and that's what we're trying to show, is that, like, how kind of awful we can be, and no matter how awful people are, there's a good person underneath all of that. That sounds a bit soppy, but
we were also interested, I think the twisted element is, we were interested in seeing if we could touch upon a creepy horror element. Like, horror was something in the beginning we talked about, hasn't really come through. It's definitely not a piece that feels like horror, but it was one of the things it was an idea that came up, but there's certainly a creepy element, and I think that's where the twisted comes in.
I suppose twisted also could refer to the fact that it's a sort of a heightened reality. So Little Bobby is basically Big Bobby's alter ego, and, like, I won't go into it, but I mean, I do have this sort of obsession with people with, like, multiple or dissociative personality, and that's not what we're trying to do in the piece. It's more just like a theatrical exploration of the type of things that people can do to cope with a situation, whether that's splitting their personality or whatever it is.
I don't mean to be too esoteric, as you said earlier.
Okay.
But when I was reading the press release, I was thinking of Beckett, kind of.
Oh,
it's okay. We'll take that. I don't know if that's what it is.
But I remember hearing some kind of interview or something, or I don't think it was an interview, I think somebody had a conversation with Beckett while he was in a taxi or something.
Yeah.
And they were going, and he looked at your man and he goes, "But Sam, what's it all about?" They were talking about Waiting for Godot.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing Beckett would say is, "It's a symbiosis." And that's it. And I was Tender, Twisted, Big Bobby, Little Bobby, that immediately struck it for me. Is that far off the mark?
I don't think so at all.
It's a funny one. You're like, you don't want to try and tell you.
You don't want to say too much.
I guess, I mean, I've always been a massive Beckett fan. And maybe it sounds pretentious to say this, but I think when I was about 13, I saw the Waiting for Godot in The Gate, and it was one of the first memories of going, oh my God, I need to get up there and do this, because I just thought it was hilarious. And I like, I think they got the humor in that so much, and yet it's like a stark reality, and it's quite, and I liked how odd it was and really humane at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's very much my cup of tea. So if there's any of that coming through, we're happy, I think. Mm-hmm.
Success. Yeah. It's a one-woman show. What are the demands on that? I mean, it's surely a big demand on you as an actor.
Yeah, it is tiring, and like it is, I was saying to my mother yesterday, it is difficult because like the show is about kind of the fact that we all have a bit of an inner critic, and you always have a bit of that, no matter how like confident I have confidence as a performer, but there's a part of you that goes, am I doing this okay? And then on top of that, I'm going, is the script okay? Is everything okay? So that's an extra bit. But yeah, it is physically and mentally more draining, so we need to keep an eye on it, and Kelly has to make me take breaks because sometimes I just want to keep going.
And the hard work isn't all for the actor. I mean, as a director, it must be quite difficult.
No, it's very much a two-way.
Yeah, it's I was quite surprised the first, you know, we were at the end of our first full week, how draining those full days are, just because you're also living through with, I'm living through all that Camille's going through up there on stage, on stage, I'm doing inverted commas. But yeah, and it goes to dark places, and I love these characters now.
Yeah.
So my heart's breaking for them and with them, and then at the same time I'm watching it as an audience member and feeling all of that, but also my director hat is on and constantly
I
alert.
I always think that must be hard for directors. I haven't directed before, having to try and watch it with fresh eyes.
Especially difficult to rein in one person, you know. I mean, I'm sure it feels like you're picking on Camille.
You know? Can you not just give someone else any notes?
That's hilarious.
I love that idea.
I said that on the first day. I think I was looking at the schedule and I realised that my first instinct when I first see the schedule is to go, where do I not have to do too much? And that was what I said to Kelly. That was my first thought. And I went, oh no, I do all of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
But,
I suppose because I'm coming from a performance background, I always try and make a point of saying the things that were really great as well as the things that need working on.
I think you strike a nice balance there. I mean, maybe
between empathy and tyranny.
Yeah, well, that's something I noticed in the classes, and one of the reasons I wanted to get Kelly on board is I do think that's hard. I feel like sometimes, it's a generalization, an older generation of directors can be a bit like, if I haven't said anything about that part of the play, then there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
And that's fine, and I understand the logic behind that as well. It's sometimes that you think, oh, I have to recreate that thing that you said was good, but I think there's balance to be had there, so that like, because it's hard when you're out there being really vulnerable, exposing yourself and trying things, and nobody acknowledges that worked or it didn't work. It's not to massage your ego, it's just so that you know if you're on track, or
exactly
if you've tried something and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a pragmatic thing. Knowing the beats that work is just psychologically great. You can almost put them then away and let them go into a subconscious place, so they'll be there. But if you haven't had any feedback on them, it's hard to know.
One of the little bits of the press release I also read was that Brazen Tales wants to challenge and entertain audiences.
Yeah. How to describe your company?
I hope it wasn't one of those throwaway.
No, it's not throwaway. No. But yeah, it's hard to encompass in a sentence, I guess. No, I think that is true. It feels like I guess.
Do you think Big
like
Bobby, Little Bobby achieves that? I suppose.
I certainly would really hope so. When I say challenge, I feel like, it's not that you want to. You never want to preach, you never want to be telling people this is what you should think. It's like you want to be able to maybe talk about something that really means something to you and be really authentic and honest with how you feel about it, so that it may provoke people to ask questions about it or just connect with it and be able to relate and for it to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And the entertainment factor for me is equally important, because that's the reason I got interested in theatre. And I mean, I sometimes think the word entertainment can be used as like, think of it being like circus or broad theatre. Entertainment is just being really engaging, whether that's through humour or
Okay, yes. Yeah. I know there are negative connotations to the word entertainment.
There is a bit, it's a bit like it's flashy or materialistic or like not material, I mean superficial. And I mean it in a just like all your senses are entertained and you're engaged and fully part of it. It's not just someone reading a novel to you. If that makes sense.
And the Fringe Festival, what does the Fringe Festival kind of offer people like yourselves, kind of independent artists?
I think it's just a fantastic opportunity to get to have an idea and bring it to fruition in a way that it's not that you can't do that outside the festival, but it's wonderful to be part of that community. We were at some a meet and greet last week, and it was just so lovely to be in a room with other people making work that we could have conversations with. Yeah. And it's that cross-pollination that happens in the Fringe that I think
that's a big part.
It's a really big part of it. And it, you feel like that, again, it's like the collective mind. You're all moving each other forward.
It's kind of like if you took, again, to use a word that has a lot of negative connotation, networking, because it feels like that's everybody's nightmare. Yeah. It's like if networking really was a lovely thing. I think that kind of sounds sort of sappy, but I feel like that is the Fringe, because it is a really friendly, the people that run it are just lovely people. They've been so helpful. I mean, also on a practical level, you're given your venue, you're given so much marketing by them and supported by them. So yeah, there is cost factors that really help as well. But yeah, and then as well, it's a platform. Like there's a lot of there's a lot of footfall to shows in the Fringe.
Absolutely.
You get potentially bigger audiences, and potentially you get people in that may want to bring your show on somewhere else. I mean, that's partly you have to push that, but Fringe helps.
Yeah, there's an initiative called Information Toolbox that we get to go and talk about our show with a number of different venues, and so there's initiatives like that that are just really useful,
really supportive. Yeah, particularly as you say for companies like this that are relatively new and unfunded, and we need to start getting on the ladder of that sort of thing.
Unfortunately, we're drawing to a close now.
Aww.
I'm always going so fast. But remind us, when is Big Bobby Little Bobby on?
So previews the 14th, opens the 15th, all the way till the 19th at 6:30 p.m. In Smock Alley Boys School, and there's also a matinee on the 19th at 3 p.m.
3 p.m. Smock Alley Boys School is a lovely venue.
It was our first choice as well, because it's kind of got that creepy sort of odd atmosphere about it, so we're using that to our advantage.
And I mean, people are on the floor right in front of you, but they're also kind of
we love how intimate it is. For sure. And tickets, fringefest.com. I think Chris probably mentioned that earlier.
Chris did mention it, or the box office on Ormond Quay.
Yes, absolutely, beside the Morrison.
Camille Lucy Ross and Kelly Shatter, it's been a pleasure to have you in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been great to come in.
All the best with the show, and I would, well, I'll definitely be there anyway. Hopefully you get a great audience and great reaction. Okay.
Super. Thanks, Emil.
That's all we have time for today, folks. I'm Morgan O'Reilly. This is Writer's Block on 90.3 Near FM. As always, if you'd like to contact the show or contribute in any way, you can email me, morgan_O'Reilly@live.com, or you can go on Twitter. The Twitter handle is @Morgan_O'Reilly. All the podcasts, info and events and stuff will be up on Twitter, so that's the place to go for information. Until next time, folks, I'll be back in 2 weeks' time on the 11th of September, and my colleague Joe Collins will be back on the 4th at the usual time of 3:30. But that's all for today, folks. Have a great weekend, and God bless.